Okay, I'd now like to introduce our speaker, Terry. Let me see. She will now share her experience for 20 minutes on page 12 and 13 of the Big Book. And she's okay to be recorded. Go ahead, Terry.
Thanks, Sandy. Good to see everybody. Glad I'm here. Hi. I guess I'm Terry. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I keep thinking that whatever I share today, I take no credit for, and I probably would never be able to make sense out of it later. So I hopefully you can. I just get excited about these pages, and they bring me in my head in so many different directions that I guess what I'm trying to say is articulating them becomes, you know, just it becomes extremely dynamic and changes all the time. And I'll just try to stay as focused as I can on the main message that comes to mind, because they're just so meaningful to me. But when I was first asked to talk on this meeting, I was so guided to go to that paragraph on page 13 that I use as a prayer, and I've used as a prayer for a long time. But, you know, at one point it was my favorite passage, then it became my prayer, and now it's kind of a live stream experience for me, this paragraph that begins with, "There I humbly offered myself to God." Before I get into that prayer, I guess, you know, I talked about wanting, I felt guided to share on that paragraph. And then when I started looking over this the last 48 hours, I realized that, you know, I'm a compulsive overeater, so I have that history as far as my addiction goes. But more than that, on page 12, I see kind of my history as a person in recovery has been, you know, kind of a deeper experience for needing and wanting God. Needing and wanting God, just like it says on page 12. Like, I'm just going to read a little bit just to kind of get me grounded in what I want to say about it, or what I have to say about it. But, you know, I became convinced that God's concerned with us if we want him enough. And I think I always, you know, it says, later it talks about the Winchester Cathedral moment, and it said, I had needed and wanted God. Like, I've always needed God, but I'm not so sure how much I wanted God. And then there are times when I think I might have wanted God, but I'm not so sure I was convinced I needed God. So, you know, I look at this and I say, that's kind of the summary of my history in the 12-step program. Like, there was a time, you know, there are times when I need him and I'm drawn, you know, I'm drawn to do certain work, and then I want him and I'm drawn to do certain work. But it was after this Big Book awakening that I really wanted and needed him more. And now with some recent work that I'm doing, it's so much clearer to me that the want and the need, there's no debating it. Like, there's absolutely no debating it. The understanding of that is broadening for me. It just keeps broadening every day. But here's my experience in Bill's story. You know, for a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. That's never been just an event for me. That's kind of a series of experiences for me, you know, that I get to this point where I humbly, you know, I want God to be with me. I need him and I want him. And he's there because he's never left, right? Accepting spiritual help. He's never left. But I always want, you know, I'm willing to offer myself to go deeper in that want and need, and to have that deeper experience of him coming, you know, him already being there, but, you know, him being more visible, or me being more aligned with him. But the presence is always blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly within myself. And it happens, right? Present day agnosticism, it like happens. Like I get into, you know, what I think I need and want, rather what God needs and wants. And all of a sudden I'm back into, you know, the blocks, the worldly clamors. And, you know, I realized when I read this morning at the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise. You know, it's not about the food anymore. What are the other things that I'm doing that I wish I wasn't doing that I want to stay away from? It always seems wise not to do them. And there's some self-reliant attempts not to do them. You know, it always seems wise. And I'm fortunate that I'm not picking up my drug of choice, but I'm truly convinced that doesn't mean I can't die an alcoholic death. I'm truly convinced of that. And then when I get to my prayer, I humbly offer myself to you as I understand you to do with me as you will. That is so paralleled, right, to the third step prayer. And, you know, I'm not going to take credit for this because I heard Judith say it a couple weeks ago. I'm the offering, and I love that idea because it's very visible to me, very visual, that my total self, myself, me as a human being, I'm the offering. And the humility of that as to who this self really is, you know, is what helps me in that prayer process. When I think of, this is what I have to offer God. This is your creation. This is the imperfect me, myself. This is the myself who's still, you know, who's still, you know, got some things, who still will always have those behaviors that, you know, don't necessarily make me as white as snow. Like that's helpful to me. That's the humility I need to know why the H is capitalized and the me is not. You know, that's what's helpful to me. And I place myself unreservedly under your care and direction. No reservations, no doubts, no fears. I mean, it's all to me, that's all equal definitions. No, there's nothing when I say this prayer and I sincerely mean it. There's nothing that I fear in making myself the offering. Like there's nothing that I fear. And I think it's why I love that line. Like it brings me down to, it just brings me down to the deepest understanding of surrender that I could possibly have. Like it helps do that for me. I admit that of myself, I am nothing, that without you, I am lost. And I probably could spend about 3 hours on that line. because first of all, I think about being lost. And sometimes I translate that just to the simplest meaning of when a child is lost, right? When a child is lost, they're parentless, they're guardianless. They're not protected. They're vulnerable. They're that word lost. It's just as meaningful to me at 64 than it would be to me at 5. You know, like I get it. Without God in this world, in this life, in this breathing, you know, physical body that I have, I'm lost. Like I am lost because I'm the director when I'm lost, because I feel like I have to have a director, and I'm inclined in this addict body of mine to go to me as the director. And when I go to me, I'm still lost because the real parent isn't there. You know, the mock parent, me, takes over. And I did that for a really long time. But the real thing is, of myself, I am nothing. So I want to start by saying, just me as me is nothing. And when I dial back for all that I've learned about that phrase and all that I live that phrase right now, is when it's just me in my addiction, with or without food, my fears, my reservations, my doubts, my self-reliance, all of the things that make me and put me in this torture, this suffering that is without God. I like to think of it in a basic sense on like kind of the fear grid that Big Book Awakening encourages us to do. And if you take that fear grid, like my first inventory that I did with that fear grid, I remember one of the, you know, my deepest fears was anyone that I loved physically being harmed, or just harm in general, like harm, right? And if you follow that through the grid, you know, why was I afraid of the harm to either me or my family, my children? Because then I would have such misery and suffering and pain. And why was I afraid of that misery and the suffering and the pain? Well, then, you know, I would be this shell of a body. I would be useless. I would be absolutely useless to anyone. I would be this being. And then of course, what was fearful about that? Why is that, you know? And then it was no God. And then eventually it was, you know, I would have no reason to live. Like, you know, why exist? There's no existence there. There's no life. There's no existence. But then it boils down to nothing, to nothing. I'm nothing in that fear. And in recent work and looking at some deep-seated fears and deep-seated resentments, it's the same exact place, only at a whole new understanding, because these fears and resentments go back so far, way beyond the time that I was a wife and a mother and a professional and all those things that now attach to those deep-seated resentments. Still nothing. It's still nothing. I follow those fears to nothing. And with God, I don't even have to get to that first column in the fear grid. Like, it's about, not that I'll never have another fear, or not that there's no fear in my life, or there will never be doubt, or, you know, I exist free of fears. That's not the expectation. It gets back to needing and wanting God. When we want Him bad enough, that fear doesn't have to run my life. When I want Him bad enough, that fear doesn't have to tell me I'm nothing. I don't exist. I don't matter. I don't even belong in this world or deserve to be here. Like, that's what the fear tells me when there's no God, and when I've miscalculated or discounted my need or my want for God, I'm there in a heartbeat. I am there in a heartbeat. I may not be taking on the biggest of fears like COVID, but I'm taking on that smallest one that comes out on a given day at a given moment. And then eventually it bridges to COVID, or it bridges to whatever. So I just want to say it again. Of myself, I am nothing. Without Him, I am lost. I think about the fact that these two pages and these words also go back to the arch, right? The foundation, the willingness, the fellowship, it being the cement, that I'm not lost if I'm doing what it says at the bottom of this page. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, humility to establish and maintain a new order of things. To me, that's the arch. To me, that's the direction. The humility is when I want and need God because I realize God is God, and that my reliance on Him is all that matters. My reliance on myself is never going to work. It's never brought me anything beneficial. It's not going to bring me anything beneficial. And to take direction is what humility means for me, you know, to take direction, to actually want to seek direction is really humble for me, really. And something I think I'll be practicing till the day I die. I hope I'll be practicing till the day I die, because I know the lifetime that I've done it can never be reversed in just another lifetime. I don't even know how long I'll live, but it just needs to be reversed, right? It just needs to be reversed. So moving on in that prayer, I ruthlessly face the sins, the bedevilments, the spiritual malady, the fears, the character defects, and ask my newfound friend to take them away. I ask you, my newfound friend, to take them away, root and branch. And the root and branch has a whole new meaning for me, a whole new meaning for me. Because I feel privileged to have, you know, to have this understanding of what root and branch really means for me. I have no idea what it means for you. I know what it means for me. It really means facing how embedded some of these fears and resentments are in me, and really seeing when and how they came, what my response to them was, and how I've allowed them to affect my life ever since then. That is such a root for me. That is such a root. Like, you know, when I think of the roots, that's a real, like, that is, in my life, they are the roots, you know, the things that brought these initial fears, right? These initial resentments. When I went through the Big Book Awakening process, one of the things that was challenging and insightful was that fear inventory process, because I just thought, you know, as I had done previously and historically, I was going to come up with this list of fears that were, you know, somewhat definitive, categorized, you know, isolated. And then when I got the direction to kind of start to really see the relationship of these fears and how many of them balled up into one, you know, one giant fear, so to speak, and then ended up with, like, I think eight major fears. I wasn't thinking about the root of them. I wasn't thinking about exactly where they might have stemmed from. But it really helped me see how these major categories of fears were pervasive throughout my life, like pervasive through all of the I had with God, myself, and others. Like that was really eye-opening. It was very eye-opening.
5 more minutes.
Thank you. So this is a prayer that I believe I'm attached to because it's an everyday prayer for me. It's an everyday prayer for me every day. It helps me to come back to the basic understanding of offering myself unreservedly, and to remember I'm seeking God's care and direction. And then those lines about, I'm nothing without you. I'm lost without you. And because I don't always say this prayer the same way. I don't see that as something that is so long ago. It could be this morning, right? That I could be lost and needing direction. It could be, you know, it's just existing in the world every day and breathing and interacting with people and coming into a world where I need and want God in order to fulfill my purpose, which every day, you know, I'm still seeking how to do that. I just need to go to God as humbly as I can to ask for that every day. And this prayer is helps me do that. And then I think just to kind of wrap up the, or bring it back to page 12. Just want to go to the part that says, it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required for me to make my beginning. So, you know, willingness being that foundation, that's why I guess I see this prayer as the full arch, because every day that's the key for me, waking up willing. Waking up, being willing, is it to have and need God with me? Is to want God with me? Is to have his direction? It's just that's not even as important as the willingness. It's waking up. I heard someone say recently that she doesn't wake up and invite God into her day. She wakes up and thanks God for inviting her back into his world, and something like that. And I think that's where the willingness starts for me. That's where it has to start for me. I have no idea what each day is going to bring. I know based on the fact that my relationship with God improves as long as I work at it, I'm excited about every day. I know that. That's way different from what my life was like in my disease. And it's also very different from what my life was like when I was in recovery, understanding the program to be still something I accomplished. And I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. But that willingness to me, upon a foundation, I can build what I see in you. I can build what I see in others. And I'm convinced that I can have this if I stay prayerful. And it's the reason every day I need to be prayerful, and that this becomes important. So I think I'm going to end there. I think that's enough said. Thank you.
Great, Carrie. Thank you. That was great. I'm going to stop the recording.